south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hi there again. Hey, by the way, you know, the biggest cell phone and internet company in all of Latin America is called Claro, C-L-A-R-O. It means clear. You might already know it's owned by billionaire fat boy Carlos Slim, kind of like the Bill Gates of Mexico. Interestingly enough, he owns 40% of all the companies on the Mexican stock exchange. And it said his net worth is equivalent to between 6 and 10% of the entire Mexican gross domestic product. In fact, for a couple of years around 2015, he was the richest man in the world. And by some accounts, the second ugliest too. Though his parents are actually from Lebanon, and he's a Lebanese Christian. So why am I bringing this up? Well, because Claro is a pretty good service. I have a Claro chip in my phone myself. By the way, what an odd coincidence. His last name is Sim, like a SIM chip. His name is an aptonym. Remember we spoke about that one time? But where were we? Oh yeah, anyway, you know, I don't have one of those plans, you know, where you give up all your info and you get a monthly bill. Talking about a cell phone plan. I'm a pay-as-you-go guy. You know, you charge up your phone with a certain amount of cash, and you recharge it when your time period runs out. If you pay as you go, you can get an anonymous SIM card. But if you get a contract plan, you'll never be able to do that because you got to give up all your data. Show them your passport, electric, water bill, all that crap. But if you're on the pay-as-you-go plan, it can be very anonymous. Because you see, as far as the SIM card, if you buy it at one of those little corner kiosks, a lot of times they don't ask you for any data at all. And if they do ask you, you can give them pretty much anything and they'll accept it. Your own dads if you want, your cleaning ladies, your gardeners, even your cat, dog, or dead uncles. However, if you buy that SIM card at a certified Claro store or Tigo store, whatever, they will ask for your passport and a bunch of dads. So just buy a SIM card at a little corner kiosk. And every once in a while, you just load that SIM card up with some cash. And you just use that balance to buy your minutes or your time or your gigs. For example, for something like $2.50, you can get 5 days of internet and regular phone service for 5 days and 8 gigs, I think it's 8, maybe 5, for downloads, uploads, and streaming for that period too. Now, you can elect 1 day, 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, 2 weeks, even a month of phone and internet service. The more you buy, the bigger the price break they give you. As for me, I'm kind of used to recharging it every 5 days, and the phone sends you a message when your time runs out. Then you just check your balance and buy some more time. But here's the thing. Just the other day when I charged it up for 5 more days, I got a message from Claro that said, "Don't forget to get vaccinated." Of course, in Spanish. That's right. I got a pop-up screen that said, "You just purchased 5 days of internet time. Don't forget to get vaxxed." And my response to Claro and fat boy Carlos Slim, the owner, "Don't forget to yourself, you ignorant piece of." And of course, I mean that in the kindest, most Christian sort of way. I'm just that kind of guy. Which brings me to this email from listener Joey in Oklahoma. He says, "Johnny, I'm down here in Guatemala for a few days taking care of some business. The main thing that has struck me is the overwhelming number of COVIDiots walking around. I'd say 99.9% of everyone down here is still wearing a mask. People wear masks inside. People wear masks outside. People ride motorcycles with masks all alone on the street. People drive cars with masks. In addition to the masks," he said, "every place of business has one of those scanning thermometers and a goop machine they want to use. It's ridiculous. I can understand old people who are afraid of getting COVID still wearing masks, but in Oklahoma, where I'm from, I seldom see anyone wearing masks in any setting. At most, really old people and Karens still wear masks. Don't these people realize the pandemic is over if there ever really was one? Is it still law down here, and are the people just sheep in Guatemala?" Signed, Okie Joe. All right, thanks for that, Okie Joe. You know, it seems to be the same in almost every Latin American city and country, except when you get out in the boonies, less and less people are wearing that stuff. But you still see lots and lots of woke gringos on the tourist trail, like in Cancun and Puerto Vallarta, Costa Rica, etc. Double masking with shields. Though when you're way off the gringo tourist trail, like in most of Guatemala, there are few gringos around for you to get that impression. It's the locals who are all masked up. Why is that? Because most all of them are gringo wannabes. And when they see the lamestream news on TV. Yeah, they get it, and it's translated. Practically every bar and restaurant you go into, they've got CNN Latin America on TV. So, you know, they're getting bombarded with the same sheeple crap you are up in the States. And they buy right into it because they are extreme wannabes. So what do you expect? Now, as far as masking mandates and such, you might remember I mentioned on last week's show, Guatemala's dropped all the mandates. No more vax requirements to get into the country either. So masking up and putting that synthetic booger goop on your hands is on you. And I don't know about you, but I found out a long time ago when somebody's intent on masking up and backing off when you don't have one. There's no talking to them, no convincing them. You just have to ignore them until they grow a new brain. Problem is, that day might never come. Oh, and related to the fact as to why there are so many sheeple in Latin America. Of course, you've got tens of millions of them up in the States, too. To be perfectly, if not extremely, un-PC about it, let's talk about human intelligence, creativity, and motivation for a minute. So, right now, I'm looking at worldpopulationreview.com statistics of country IQ rankings. It's called Average IQ by Country. Now, you can say, like so many wokesters do, that IQ testing is BS. It doesn't show real intelligence. Well, you'd have a hard time explaining that to the U.S. government. You know, the U.S. Army has been doing IQ testing for 100 years. They've tested millions upon millions of men. And they'll keep on doing it. They used to call it an IQ test, but they've softened it. Because some people just don't like the term IQ. It's too harsh. I know the wokesters and the PC people will say IQ testing is just another something that white supremacists have come up with. Wrong. Tell that to the U.S. military, why don't you? Now, why would the U.S. Army want to do IQ testing when it's so un-PC? Just the thought of it drives the wokesters absolutely crazy. Of course, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard absolutely have to qualify a person to see if he's officer material, car or airplane mechanic material, or only just smart enough to load, shoot a rifle, and carry out orders. By the way, you can look this up. A person with an 81 IQ or lower will not be accepted into the United States Armed Forces. It turns out, you see, all prospective Armed Forces enlistees are given the Armed Forces Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, the ASVAB, which is an IQ test. I'm reading this right off the U.S. government document 10 USC 520. It says, translating from percentiles to IQ, the law implies that an IQ below 81 will disqualify them from military service. And it says people with the IQ of 81 to 93 cannot comprise more than 20% of all enlistees. So that means if you're a below average slug and 100 is deemed to be average IQ, they only allow 20% slugs in the U.S. military. That is, people with an IQ of 81 to 93. So, all you wokesters, you can chew on that for a while. So what's that got to do with anything? Well, bringing it around to chronic maskers and lemmings who blindly follow government edicts and mandates. Did you know, and I'm getting this again from the worldpopulationreview.com, country ranking, average IQ by country, and I'll send this to you. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, if you don't believe it. It says the average IQ in the U.S. today, in 2022, is 97, and you know 100 is dead average. So the average American is actually below average. Not by much, but slightly. Top country in IQ was Japan with 106. Below that, Taiwan, 106. Singapore, 105. China, 104. First European country to pop up on that list is Finland with 101. Then Liechtenstein, 101. And Germany, about 101. By the way, Canada is 2 points ahead of the U.S. at 99. Now, since this show is all about living, working, playing, and doing business in Latin America, I bet you want to know how their IQs stack up. Well, it ain't pretty, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate mail for this, but I'm used to it. And maybe, who knows, I'll be canceled once and for all. So here goes, my haters' wake-up call. Out of all the 20 Latin American countries, the top Latin American country in average IQ is Costa Rica at 88, tied with Chile, a full 9 IQ points below the U.S. Then there's Argentina at 86, Paraguay and Cuba at 84, Colombia at 83, the DR and Puerto Rico at 82, Peru at 81, and Panama at 79. All right, let's stop for a second here. That means that the average Panamanian would be rejected from the U.S. military. All right, let's keep going with our race to the bottom. Ecuador, 77. Bolivia, 76. El Salvador, 70. Belize and Honduras, 62. Nicaragua, 52. Guatemala, 48. You hear that, Okijo? The average IQ in Guatemala is 48. Now, I know these stats might sound pretty shocking to a lot of you. but it gives you some food for thought. Next time you ask yourself why third world countries always seem to stay third world, with the only real solid success stories being South Korea and Singapore being able to jump from third world to first world in a matter of 30 or 40 years. But as you've just seen, they've got a much higher average IQ and different culture completely. So what does IQ really predict? Well, when measured in a young kid and it doesn't change much throughout adulthood, it's the best single indicator of future socioeconomic success. Though it's not an absolute predictor, it's got a very high correlation to future socioeconomic success. Now, if you are a wokester yourself and think it's all BS, just ask any high school teacher who've had the same group of students for a long, long time. Just ask that teacher to rank their students just as to who they expect in the next 10 years to have the greatest amount of socioeconomic success. Those high school teachers are often right on the money, and it's nearly always highly correlated to IQ. Now, we can make a lot of snap judgments about countries and cultures that have very low average IQs, like, for example, Honduras, Guatemala, Paraguay, Colombia, Mexico. But the fact is, you know, it's all on a bell curve. So they've got their share of very brilliant people and even geniuses, too. Of course, the bell curve's shifted to the left, so they got a higher percentage of idiots, slugs, and morons compared to the worldwide average of 100. Though I have to admit, it seems Americans are on their own race to the bottom. They're getting dumber by the minute, too. Though none of that explains the fact that Latin Americans are so entrepreneurial, so much more so than any Americans I knew when I lived back up in the States. It's really a strange conundrum. Very low average IQ, very high entrepreneurial spirit. What I mean is that within every Latin American family, or average Latin American family anyway, it seems mom, dad, the kids, grandma, grandpa, somebody, or all of them, has a little thing going on the side, a little entrepreneurial business, whether it's growing and selling fruits and vegetables, repairing motorcycles, cutting door keys, selling tortillas, doing laundry, mending dresses, repairing computers or TVs, selling baked goods or fireworks, often from a room closest to the street that they've converted for that purpose. It's something I never experienced myself when I was living back up in the States as a kid. My family was middle class or slightly lower middle class, and in my neighborhood, everyone's dad seemed to work in a factory or for the man. And us kids and all the friends we knew, when we hit high school, we'd get jobs at the golf course, stocking shelves at Kohl's or Penny's or a department store. Most all of us got paper outs, stuff like that, but we never went out and created our own little businesses. I don't know anybody who did that. Anyone who was his own boss. We all got jobs with the man too, usually starting at 12 years old with a paper route. Now, unlike up in the States, down here in Latin America at a very local level, you can watch capitalism pop up overnight, spontaneously too, sometimes within a half an hour. In fact, I can't tell you how many times there's been a roadblock or maybe a rock slide that stopped traffic, or even a truck or a chicken bus crash that blocked traffic. Within a half an hour or so, people are coming up to your car door offering to sell you things. People selling Coca-Cola and beer out of coolers, a young kid with a box of nicely packaged cashews or almonds, ladies with a basket of sandwiches or tortillas on their heads. I don't know how they do it, but some of those ladies defy gravity with the amount of stuff for sale they can balance on their heads. They've got the knack. Oh, and it never fails. Every time there's a big roadblock like that, some lady, or maybe two or three ladies, will come by selling cake, chocolate, vanilla, lemon, or tiramisu by the slice. Meanwhile, up in the States, if a little kid sets up a lemonade stand in his own driveway, the city will shut him down and fine his parents, unless he goes down to City Hall and files for a permit. And by that time, for any little kid, acting on an impulse because it's a hot day and lemonade will sell, the thrill is gone. So what are we to make of all this? Well, from my observation, the reason why so many young adolescent Latin American kids have an entrepreneurial spirit, even at the ripe old age of 9 or 10, they have no fear because it's so very normal. They've got plenty of examples around them, friends, neighbors, and family, bringing in a little cash with a gig on the side. Hey, when I was 9 or 10, I was eating peanut butter sandwiches and watching Bozo. Though soon enough, I was cutting a few lawns and washing cars here and there, but what I really wanted was to turn 12 so I could get a paper out. After all, that 50-cent a week allowance my dad promised me was not always forthcoming. And I remember when I first got my Chicago Trib route, I think I had something like 120 customers. I was making a whole $14 a week. And for a while there, I was like a pig in feces, up to my ears in Pez, Hershey bars, and Superman comic books. But, you know, the human condition dictates that we always seem to spend up to and beyond our means. Oh, well. Wait a minute. $14 way back when I was in eighth grade? I just looked it up on the World Inflation Calculator, and guess what? That's $96 in today's money. $96 a week, not bad for a 12-year-old kid, huh? But it does point to something ominous, that U.S. dollar funny money has suffered 650% inflation since then. What a disaster, like a slow metastasizing cancer, whose cause is, surprise, surprise, government. But you know that already, right? Hey, how about a really cool boots on the ground story? Just when I thought I'd seen everything, I was sitting at a little cafe restaurant the other day, outside cafe. My table was right at the end, next to the edge of the property, and the property next door was a body shop. It was kind of a wide-open garage-style body shop, too. You know, typical Latin American, disorganized, chaotic, car parts everywhere, and a guy painting cars, no protection, no masks, nothing. Isn't that funny? They won't wear a mask when they're spraying toxic fumes, but they'll mask up, sometimes even double mask up, for a hyped pandemic. Worse yet, they'll use the same mask for a week, sometimes two or three. Anyway, I was sipping my cafe, looking directly into this lot, and there were six or seven cars in various stages of being painted with tape and paper on them, masking certain areas, etc. With the nearest car being painted at least 50 feet away from me, so I couldn't smell the fumes myself. Anyway, I'm sipping my coffee, and a black Toyota Yaris pulls up into that lot. It looked like new, all shiny, glossy, not a scratch, nick, or dent in it. Sort of unusual for a car in Latin America. I figured it just must have had some work done, or recently imported, perhaps. Anyway, it pulled into the lot, stopped, and this lady got out of the driver's side. Man, was she a looker, like Miss Panama, Guatemala, or Colombia, or something. Anyway, the guy stopped painting those cars and walked right up to her. And suddenly another guy got out of the car, a nerdy-looking guy, handsome but nerdy. Then, surprise, surprise, the lady started yelling at the car body guy. She was so loud I caught almost every word. She said, "Mentiroso, estafador," which pretty much translates to, "You liar, you swindler." And the guy said, "What? What are you talking about?" She said, "My car," she pointed to her black Yaris. She said, "You painted it all right, but you stole my rearview camera and I paid you for a brand new bumper. You put the old one back on." Then she pointed to the nerdy guy that was standing about 10 foot behind her and said, "He looked under the car and took pictures. The old cracked bumper is there. You just put it back on and tried to fix it. And you charged me $300 for a brand new original one, and you never bought it or put it on." Then the shop owner screwed up. He started laughing at her like it was a joke. You'll never guess what happened next. She reached into her purse, took out a rock about as big as a pack of cigarettes, hit him right in the forehead with it. He started bleeding. Then she opened her purse again, took out another rock, and broke three windows in the car the guy was painting. By then, the nerd that was standing behind her was freaking out, saying, "Let's go, let's go. He's going to call the police." But she didn't until she got in a couple of more choice words in Spanish, of course. The nerd ran up to her while she was screaming at the guy, pulled her by the arm into the car. He started it up, and they zoomed out of there. Man, I wish I could have got a video of that one. Talk about going viral. But it all happened in the space of about 1 minute. Now, you probably heard rumors that Latinos and Latinas have what they call a Latin temper. That if provoked, they could explode in a way that no gringo or gringa from up north could ever do. Man, that was the best example of a Latina temper I ever saw. And I've seen quite a few Latina outbursts. In fact, I've had a few blow up on me. The upside is, though, that they're not mad for very long. I found that it's very rare that a Latina holds a grudge. In fact, they're most forgiving when it comes to their macho men cheating on them. I've told a number of those stories before. But again, let me restate, they don't carry a grudge for long. I'm sure when you're down here, you'll see it for yourself. Once you become friends with a Latina-Latino couple, you'll find they're making up and breaking up all the time. It's normal. And as far as Latino men and their violent tempers, sure, you hear stories all the time about Latino men slapping around or beating up their women. But that's almost always behind closed doors. You never see that out in public or when you're visiting someone's house. I take it back. I did see that once in a disco parking lot. A Latino guy beat up his girl right there because she was too sexy. Though I've been in plenty of situations where I've seen a Latina blow up at her husband or boyfriend. When they decide to explode, they explode. Oh, and I've seen Latinas smack their men around too. But you know how it is with most guys. When a woman starts hitting you, it's pretty easy to block the punches and just let her blow off some steam. There's never an excuse for hitting a woman. A guy punching another guy once in a while, that's okay. Or a woman punching a guy, see that once in a while, especially here in Latin America. Sometimes you hear about that happening behind closed doors, a woman whacking her guy. But in the States, I have never seen that in public. By the way, about that little car story I just told you, there's another secondary lesson to be learned from that little item. Mechanics, painters, body guys, and garage shop guys will take advantage of women much more than they will of men. That seems to be universal. And that's why, no matter how sexist this might sound, I don't think it's good to send a woman out to buy a car on her own or to go to a repair shop on her own with a car to have some work done. There is a much better chance she'll be gouged and swindled than if it was a guy in her place or a guy accompanying her. Now, when you've got all these snowflakes, snowfucks, and woke people whining and complaining, talking about equality and how we're all on the same footing, well, I'm sorry to say, and I'm not endorsing this, but it's just more than obvious that a crooked car salesman or repair guy could much more easily prey on a woman than a man. Same thing with a robber or a thief. Why do you think women are the number one victims of cell phone theft by far? If you were a no good Nick, who would you rather steal from, a man or a woman? In fact, I was looking at some statistics in a Colombian business journal. It said 78% of all cell phone thefts in Colombia are reported by women, with 22% reported by men. Those are stats from 2021. That means 3 out of 4 cell phone thefts in Colombia, and that's probably pretty standard for all of Latin America, the victims are women. Oh, and by the way, this study also says that only about 1 in 5 people go down to the police department and file a report, which shows how much faith the average citizen in Colombia, anyway, has in the local police department. Yeah, right, to serve and protect. Yeah, that's about as sincere as a cop saying have a nice day after he's given you a speeding ticket. Oh, and this won't shock you. It also says that 1 in 5 that will report their phone stolen to police only do so because they've got insurance on their phone, and that's the only way they can file a claim and get reimbursed. That makes sense. All right, changing gears. By popular demand, I've got quite a few people asking me to finish up that segment on death, dying, wills, and funerals in Latin America. You might remember a couple of weeks ago I got going on that, but didn't have time to finish. So we'll pick up where we left off, talking about funerals. Now, if you're down here long enough in Latin America, you will be invited to a funeral or 2 or 3 or 10. And oftentimes, if you're friends with middle and lower middle class Latinos, you'll get invited to a funeral service at their house. That's a very common way for lower middle class and certain rather poor Latinos to save a lot of money over having it at a regular funeral home. And even though there's no shame or embarrassment in it at all, if Latinos could afford it, that is, if they've got credit, they'd much rather have the service at the funeral home because it impresses the friends and relatives, and they really like to put on the dog, even if they end up paying for it on a 5-year plan. In fact, you might remember a year or two ago, I was talking about a loan shark I know here in Latin America. He's not a bad guy. He doesn't break legs or anything. He just is a neighborhood loan shark. Every middle and lower middle class neighborhood has one, along with a fortune teller, clairvoyant, and a voodoo lady, also known as a bruja. Now, if you recall that show, you might remember that loan shark acquaintance of mine said he only lends to local women who have kids and a family, women who are stable, women who will always be current, or at least most of the time, current with their payments. Now, this may or may not surprise you, but my loan shark acquaintance also says that about 25% of all the money he loans out is for funerals and about 25% for weddings and quinceañeros parties. So most Latinos aren't going in hoc with the local loan shark to buy a big screen TV or a motorcycle. They're going in hoc to throw a 15-year-old coming out party, a wedding, or a funeral. Seems like most of that loan shark money's for partying. And after a party, there's nothing to show for it except a big cleanup. Go figure, huh? By the way, the farther you get out in the boonies, the more you're likely to see funerals held at home and not in a funeral home. Also, the farther you get out in the boonies, the more likely you are to see a funeral procession with no cars. What I mean is, there'll be a ton of people walking down the street, all dressed up in their Sunday best, carrying flowers and wreaths, led by a priest leading everyone in prayer, with the casket on a decorated funeral cart, being hauled down the road manually by the pallbearers. And what they're doing, you see, is having the service at church, and then they haul the body with the procession down the road to the local cemetery, often with no vehicles involved at all, which greatly cuts down on expenses, too. Oh, and there's another thing that's particular to funerals in Latin America. Generally, exactly 1 month after the funeral service, there'll be another get-together at the church, house, or cemetery. There'll be flowers and tons of candles lit and a lot of food, as you might imagine. And remember, most Latino homes have a little altar with Mary and Joseph and Jesus and a Bible and candles. Well, exactly 1 month after the funeral, the family will mount a bunch of photos of the deceased right there on that altar. It'll be kind of a low-key party with cake and cookies, refreshments, a lot of prayers, and sometimes a lot of booze. But it's not over till it's over. Exactly 1 year later, they'll do it all again. But note that year-later event is usually done when someone dies younger before their time. Yep, and normally the loan shark will get an invite too. Oh, and here's something you ought to know. If you have a Latin American health insurance policy, if you look closely at the fine print, you'll find they usually have a death benefit payout anywhere from a grand to $2,500. And believe me, the only way you're going to get them to pay out is you'll have to contact them. They're not going to contact you. Oh, and if you're down here in Latin America for any length of time, you're going to have a bank account, right? And most Latin American banks will let you buy funeral insurance for just a couple of bucks a month. Is it worth it? Maybe, but I don't know anyone who's actually ever used it, so I can't tell you. Oh, and another thing. If you have a bank account, you probably have a debit or maybe even a credit card. That allows you to buy death benefit insurance if you check the box when you sign up for that card. Now, I remember back in the States in the 80s when my dad died. A week or two later, when everything kind of calmed down, my mother went through the dresser drawers and she found out he'd taken out a couple of loans unbeknownst to her at his credit union. She was terribly pissed off about it because now she was on the hook for it. Not only that, they had recently bought a new Honda Accord and had a ton of payments left on that. Anyway, a couple of days later, my mom found my dad's credit card statements and realized they were taking out, I think, $2 a month for life insurance or death benefit insurance, whatever you want to call it. And since he checked that box when he first got the credit card, guess what? They paid all of those debts, my dad's loans and the car loan. So that helped, and it all came down to the fact that he did check that box when he first signed up for that credit card. So is it worth it? Well, it depends. If you're the kind of person that carries no debt, it's not worth it. However, if you're like my dad, my sisters, and most Americans, well, then probably. All right, now one suggestion that's more than a suggestion. I think once a year, you should go through your house and take a video or photos of everything you've got in that house and your car, all your valuables. Better a video, though, because then you could list things and narrate it. And send that off to a trustworthy family member and the executor of your will. That way you don't have to list everything. That's kind of crazy because we all have way too much junk. That could take forever. Just take a video. It is a great way to keep the scavengers at bay. You might remember that cautionary tale I told about the time I bought a car, a Suzuki Vitara, from a deceased American military guy. Actually, I bought it from his daughter, who'd come down from the States to dispose of his things in his will. You might recall when she first walked into her dad's house, she'd never been there before, first time down from the States. It was empty, cleaned out. She was shocked, but had no recourse. The punchline being when she went to her dad's lawyer's house to sign some paperwork, she recognized that some of the furniture there was formerly in her dad's house. She remembered seeing some of that stuff in the pictures he'd sent. Yeah, the lawyer was a crook, but she had no recourse. But if she'd had a narrated video of the things in her dad's house, it would have been a completely different story.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.